Hope you had a great weekend. I had a very interesting weekend with some very dedicated people, dedicated to the proposition that we've got to get our country back, and the best way to do that is to take to the streets, to do civil disobedience, to respond. I don't want to talk about it a whole lot. There's a YouTube video up that Tara at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com put together. If you want to check it out, go to RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. I do want to mention, though, that this event over the weekend, there were two events. First of all was the action on Saturday in Washington, D.C. There was a series of speeches or addresses or the very, very brief by a number of people. I was included in that group, but the really important words were spoken by people like Chris Hedges and Daniel Ellsberg and just Ralph Nader, a whole list of people. There were Vietnam veterans there. There were Iraq War veterans. There were Afghanistan War veterans. There were a lot of people speaking out on behalf of peace and justice and freedom. And it was a real honor to be part of that, or to be in the audience, just to stand there and listen to people who still, and some of these people, I mean, let's face it, they're in their 70s, and to listen to people still, after all these years, dedicated to the idea that they will not give in, they will not give out, they will not give up, they will continue to in the struggle. And it was very humbling for someone like me to be included with that group. Also, a couple of people that you know, Bob Kincaid was there. I believe he and I were the only talk show hosts of the liberal persuasion who saw fit to come. And Tara at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, a lot of you know her as Tara Dactyl. The three of us and Jude, who you've heard me talk about on this program many times, from Seattle, Tara from New York, Bob from West Virginia, Jude from Seattle, and I were kind of the gruesome foursome as we made our way around both of these events. And the action on Saturday, I chose to be arrested and joined with some pretty moving, dedicated people. The younger vets were the ones that just really blew me away. These are guys in their 20s and 30s who became, for whatever their length of service was, part of the U.S. military, and had their epiphanous moments where they decided, wait a second, this is madness, this is insanity. And to from people that young all the way up to people in their 60s and 70s, Iraq War veterans, Afghanistan, first Iraq War, Vietnam veterans, an awful lot of women from various organizations, of course, Code Pink and Medea Benjamin, who also chose to, I believe, on the second day, on Sunday, Medea was arrested at the action in Quantico. She may have been arrested Saturday too. Some of these folks have been arrested so many times in the struggle for justice. It's gotten to the point where you can't continue to count. I think Ellsberg has been arrested 80 plus times in a struggle for justice and peace. While all this was going on, of course, President Obama, our newest war president, was ordering, illegally, in my opinion, U.S. participation in an attack on Libya, yeah. Muammar Gaddafi is a son of a bitch, yeah. He's a dictator. Yes, he's murdering his own people. But you know what? There are probably 15 or 18 or 20 other countries in Africa where the same thing is going on. And it gives you pause, doesn't it? It gives me pause. Why have we not joined a coalition with France and the U.K. and whomever else to attack and bomb the command and control in these countries? What about Zimbabwe? Well, I mean, just go down the list. But maybe it's because, what? Libya is the one with the oil? No. Come on, Malloy, that can't be. So while a lot of people might try to justify this attack on Libya as being attack on another murderous dictator, okay, but it demands the question then, why not other countries in Africa? Why not other countries not in Africa? Why Libya? What is it about Libya that after 41 years of Gaddafi, all of a sudden this? We'll probably get to that at some point this evening. But Mike Ferner, who is the past president, national president of Veterans for Peace, who was one of the organizers, Kim Carlisle, a guy who puts out the War Crimes Times. If you want to read something online, warcrimestimes.org, I recommend that. Also, the people from the Iraq Veterans Against the War organization, Medea Benjamin at Code Pink. The list just goes on and on. To participate in an action like that, in an attempt to let the power in this country know that the anti-war movement is not dead, it's not gone. It never went away. The fact that it is not reported doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's still there. And the camaraderie that developed aside from what was going on between Bob Kincaid and Jude and Tara and me was, it's amazing how much can be packed into 72 hours. You've done stuff like that. You know what it feels like when time is compressed. So I just wanted to say that, again, Bob Kincaid and I, as far as I know, were the only talk show hosts who were there. And I think that is, I don't know, I just comment on it because some people, most liberal talk show hosts, so-called, especially the ones with their own television programs also, have this enormous forum, an enormous platform to speak against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and now the attack on Libya. And yet, I guess for some of them who work for various media corporations, they're not allowed to. They're simply, by God, not allowed to. And for that, I give them the finger. I just say, shame on you. I don't mean the middle finger. I mean the pointed finger. Shame on you. Shame. Shame on you. Shame on you. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stand up and walk out on me.
Is this the first or the second full day of spring? Second? I want to tell you again about what's waiting for you. These biting, stinging hordes of insects. not to be confused, as Alice writes, with blood-sucking Republicans. But one of our on-site advertisers, a big supporter of this program, is Alice at Helen Hollers. She has some magical salves and potions that she makes that are astonishing. And I want you to go to her website. She's got something called Helen Holler Summer Scent Insect Repellent and chickweed salve. If you haven't tried this, you're kidding yourself. So she's running a special. If you buy both of them, you get a prize break. So I want you to go to my website, go to MikeMalloy.com, and click on Alice's ad, Helen Hollers. And I want you to try it, okay? Do this. Just do it for Uncle Mike. Helen Hollers Summer Scent Insect Repellent and Chickweed Salve. Give it a shot, all right? And by the way, the sponsor of tonight's program, it's brought to you by Mini Cooper with 37 miles per gallon. Learn more at miniusa.com/info. A little bit more here and I'm going to drop this. The event on Saturday was separate from the event on Sunday. The event on Sunday, was a rally in support of Bradley Manning. Now, on Saturday, when we got busted, it was with SWAT teams. If you've been arrested before, and I know a lot of you have, you know how painful those plastic handcuffs can be. But Sunday, the group I was with, there were three buses, and we drove to Quantico. There were other people, of course, many more people that were involved in the protests. But our group left from Union Station in D.C., drove to Quantico, and there was an enormous police presence there. There was right. We went to the gate, one of the gates to the base on Highway 1, US 1. It was under construction. There's a small stage had been set up in one of the fields, one of the areas plowed up to make way for this road improvement that they're doing on Highway 1. Off in the distance, there were a lot of cops on horseback. Up close, there were county police and city police and state troopers. There were people with the ones that were a bit unnerving, if you're not used to doing this sort of thing, were the guys from the Virginia State Police, the riot squad people with automatic weapons, the face shields, the the helmets that cover their dressed in black, the ones that hold the big shields in front of them and form a line and start marching towards the protesters with that hum, 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 hum. And when they get close to you, the people I was with, I was with Code Pink group at the time, and two women and I were holding a protest sign that was designed to look like prison bars. It was very effective. We were holding onto the bars, and above the bars was a sign. And I was dressed in an orange jumpsuit. The women with me were dressed in prison stripes. And we were right in front. So when the riot police approached, it was us that they pushed against. And if you've never felt that, you never felt one of those shields go against you and the force behind it as they push you back. And of course, we were resisting as much as we could and did real well. The woman next to me had to be in her 70s, bless her heart. And I'm not saying that condescendingly. Jesus Christ, she had more guts about some of the stuff than people 40 years younger. I was blown away by some of these older women little ladies. And again, I'm sorry to use that terminology, but they were. They were little ladies. They were people that if you saw in the supermarket, you'd want to go over and say, oh, can I help you with your shopping cart? And here they were up against these goddamn militarized police presence, people three times their size, five times their weight, pushing against them, screaming at them, not screaming, but telling them to get back, and to stand with people like this. Now, no, it wasn't all old ladies, and I don't mean to imply that. But when you see that, when you're in a group where they have young people, some of these young soldiers, I watched a guy give a speech at the Bradley Manning protest in full army uniform, his dress greens with battle ribbons. And at one point in the speech, he tore him off his shirt and threw him on the stage. We'll be right back. The hour, or before the hour, pick one. Once again, Alice, a heel and hollers, wants me to tell you it's the second full day of spring and the biting, stinging hordes of insects are waiting for you. Arm yourself with heel and hollers, summer scent, summer's scent insect repellent. That stuff smells good. Oh my God, it reminded me of camp. And chickweed salve. Now, the way you do this, just go to my website, click on the Heel and Hollers ad there, and click on through to Alice's website, and she has a special for you, like money off if you buy both. Check it out. You got to have this stuff. You got to. I guess I didn't want to add anything. That's about it. It's been a long time since I participated in the so-called civil disobedience like that. Oh my God, it's been 30 years. And it's kind of a time warp, I guess, because the civil rights songs are still the same. The faces, though, now are older. For the moment, there are a lot of young people there. There were, but the huge segment of the crowd were people that you just, I mean, because of where we live. Look, we live in the kind of society that says when you hit a certain age, you're supposed to stay home and watch television. Not these people. Not these people at all. And it's not that I'm trying to stereotype. It's just that, you know, I'm as much of a victim of role playing as anybody else. You know, people look at me and say, Jesus Christ, why isn't that guy got his feet up someplace fishing? What are you doing out there, Malloy, with your gray hair? So it's that kind of thing. But to stand there with up against the militarized police, and no, it's not a different experience. It's not unique. It's not something that isn't done so many times. It's just that it's so infrequently done in this country anymore. But to stand there with people who are so courageous, who are just saying no, no. And you know, the fact that they are way beyond the age when they should be collecting Social Security, well, they probably are collecting it, is just, I don't know, it just struck me as very powerful. It's just very, very powerful. I felt like, you know, privileged to stand next to that older woman who was beside me for the in the Code Pink contingent. And she, by God, was not going to move an inch, no matter how big and menacing and well-armed these riot police were. It's just, I don't know. It's just hard to describe. Hard to describe. And I don't know her name, but, and I know she's not listening to my 25-cent radio program, but I will guarantee you that the courage that I saw in some of these people on Saturday and Sunday was pretty humbling, pretty impressive. But again, to the people who organize, who are out there all the time, Medea Benjamin is out there all the time, Mike Ferner all the time, Kim Carlisle all the time, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Daniel Ellsberg. I mean, you know some of the names and some of the organizations. And I would just suggest that you think about civil disobedience, that you think about the rightness of what these folks who organize these protests, what they're doing. And if you're able to, and I know a lot of folks are not, but if you are able to, then there's nothing holding you back except maybe hesitation. Maybe it's time to overcome that. And again, to my three partners in crime, as it turned out, you know, Bob Kincaid, the head on Radio Network, and Tara Dactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, and Jude from the Women Standing organization, HERS. We all went there for a purpose and did what we went to do. So, Saturday night, we got together for a beer and found out that Barack Obama has become like George W. Bush, who was like Bill Clinton, who was like, I mean, just work your way back. Now Obama has his own military adventure. And I don't care how it's phrased. I don't care what attempts are made to justify unilateral action. And I especially don't give a rat's ass about these right-wingers now who are coming at Obama. If Obama all of a sudden was able to turn water into wine and walk on the surface of the ocean, they would still find some reason to condemn him, some way to condemn him. So screw them. I don't care about the right-wingers. I'm talking about the rule of law. I'm talking about, here we go, Obama with his participation in this attack on Libya. Another shock and awe? Sure, of course. That's the way it's done now. And again, I would only point out the ridiculously obvious that if we are all about what we are being told we're all about in the attack on Libya, that it is a dictator who is now killing his own people or suppressing his own people, then when do we attack Saudi Arabia, for example? That's not an African country, but Saudi Arabia just invaded Bahrain. Saudi Arabia felt it permissible to move troops across an international border of a sort and commit murder and mayhem in Bahrain. Where is Obama's, why are we not bombing Riyadh? We're bombing Tripoli, why not Riyadh? The goddamn hypocrisy here. To hell with you, Obama. To hell with you. Shame on you. So you're in Brazil. And what's the name of this? Odyssey Dawn? Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, does that mean? Odyssey Dawn? That's the brand of this particular military adventure. Odyssey Dawn. I'll be damned. Doesn't it sound lovely? Odyssey Dawn. It sounds like a cruise ship floating off the coast of St. Thomas.
I mean, it's like Madison Avenue is writing these slogans. I was going to say it sounded like the newest scent from your favorite dishwashing liquid, Dawn Odyssey.
Dawn
Odyssey.
Get your
dishes clean. And your hands, too. You're soaking in it.
Yeah. Remember that?
Well, my favorite was when the original invasion of Iraq was going to be Operation Iraqi Liberation. Do you remember that?
Right.
Until some genii realized that that spelled oil.
Oil, yeah.
Oops. Can't do that.
So now we have Odyssey Dawn. Shame on you, Barack Obama. And shame on me for ever thinking that Mr. Obama represented something legal, just, and decent. He's like every other one of them. I don't give a damn if they take him into a room after they're elected and say, look at this video of the assassination of Kennedy. And the president sits here and says, well, that's not the Zapruder film. And the people showing it to him say, that's right. We have a moment with Bob a little bit later tonight. What else do we have tonight? We're gonna open up the phones next hour. And oh, by the way, no, I didn't see Blue there. Blue never made it. The our Australian friend. No, he just didn't. Unless he was there and I didn't see him. I don't know. All right, we'll be back after the break. This hour has been sponsored by Heal and Hollers. Oh, Lord, have mercy. You've got to go. Go to my website, MikeMalloy.com. You'll see an ad there for Heal and Hollers. That's our friend Alice's magic potion notion. What she's got going right now is Heal and Holler Summer's Scent Insect Repellent and Chickweed Salve. And if you click on through to her site, she's running a special for Malloy Show listeners. I think you have to get there through my site. Go to MikeMalloy.com and then click on Heal and Hollers. And she sent us some of this stuff. And I don't know. When you get it, open it up and take a smell and tell me what it reminds you of. Just send me an email. I don't want any smart-ass answers either. Really, what it really reminds you of. To me, it just reminds me of summer camp. I don't know why. But
Because it's insect repellent.
No, that's not the reason. If you go to the store and buy off, you know, put that stuff on your skin, oh, my God, you might keel over dead. I'm serious. But if you get, Alice does natural stuff, so go to Healin' Hollers. Will you please do that for me? Summer's scent, insect repellent, and chickweed salve. Will you try saying it? Chickweed salve. Say it real fast. Thanks, Alice. Where was I? I don't want to beat the point to death about protests. I really don't. You know, it's not, I don't lecture people. I scream at them if they're, you know, the power group in this country, rotten bastards, all of them. And try to shame the killers and the murderers, but I don't, you know, it's not my place to lecture at all. And so that's not what this is. This is just a very strong suggestion, recommendation to put yourself out there the next time you have the chance. Yeah, you might get arrested, but so what? You know, you're not... it's not like being arrested in... you just have to work that out yourself. Everybody, you know, when we went to the Manning protest on Sunday, on the bus out there, one of the people, one of the organizers, one of the legal representatives made it very clear to us, this is different from the action that you people did yesterday. There are several charges you might face here. There is a possibility that you can be held for a longer period of time. You have to make this decision. The mere fact that you were here protesting speaks volumes. If you decide to commit civil disobedience, and I hate that term, because all we did in either instance was just stand our ground. We didn't do anything. This is how the sons of bitches get you. And I may have said this earlier this hour. I don't know. I've still got a head full of mush here. But the First Amendment guarantees us that right, doesn't it? To gather and peacefully and protest. There was nothing not peaceful. But when you're surrounded, you know, you've done this before. So have I. This is no news flash. You're surrounded by people with automatic weapons and horses and shields and clubs and sticks and cattle prods and mace and tear gas and chains and goddamn handcuffs and buses and prisons and the entire militarized security state up against you. Yeah, it can be intimidating. You're goddamn right it can. All the more reason to take a stand. I keep thinking about that old lady beside of me who barely came up to my shoulder. Standing there, her face wasn't as high as this militarized riot cop belt buckle. You know, you sing that song about not going to be turned around, or I'm going to stand my ground, or whatever. And those are great songs, you know, the civil rights songs are great songs to sing. Like a mighty tree standing by the water. I'm not going to be moved. I shall not be moved. And then you come up against a wall of weaponry and huge men. And any fleeting queasiness I might have felt in the pit of my stomach, and I look down to my left and I see this old lady standing there holding up her part of that sign. It was like, you know, the foot of these old wrought iron beds with the bars. That's what it was more or less made out of. And then we had a sign up on our code pink, had a sign up on top of it. And three of us are holding that thing, which made us, you know, gave the impression of you're in prison. And to see that woman goddamn refuse to back down. No! And it was just, oh my goodness. So, if the next time there's an action, I would like to invite, and I'm sure Bob Kincaid would like to do the same, we would like to invite our fellow progressive or liberal talk show hosts to join us. You don't have to get arrested, but maybe just show up and say no. Say it, that you're not, you can talk the talk, but you can also walk the walk. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Adventurous.
Herlihy, whose message is supporting the Malloys for the past 8 years, the best 25-bit podcast ever. Keep it lit. You mean 2-bit, don't you? The best 2-bit podcast ever. Keep it lit. Thanks, James. James Herlihy is the sponsor for this hour. What else we got here? I did not walk up to Ralph Nader and start talking to him at the Washington, D.C. protest on Saturday. I just didn't feel that that was the proper thing to do. I did walk over and say, hi, glad you're here, glad I'm here, glad we're all here. And, you know, Nader is not, unless he's, you know, talking about the issues, he's not a conversationalist with strangers that come up to him in the middle of an anti-war rally and say, hi. the presentation he made from that stage was so typically Ralph Nader and so typically right on target. And now Nader is saying that Obama should be impeached for committing war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said in an interview that aired Friday, before the weekend's events, that Obama has committed war crimes on the same level as George Bush. Nader said in an interview with Democracy Now, the Hill describes Democracy Now! As the anti-war Democracy Now! Organization. That's interesting. Obama is quoted at the Hill as saying, quote, why don't we say what's on the minds of many legal experts, that the Obama administration is committing war crimes, and if Bush should have been impeached, Obama should be impeached, end quote. The comments, of course, came before the military strikes that were launched against Libya on Saturday. But they do constitute some of the toughest criticisms of Obama from the left. Nader's comments were directed at Obama's prosecution, for the most part, of the Afghanistan war. A lot of people have I have, to Obama's decision to escalate that war. And what is even worse, you know, once you learn a little bit, go beneath the headlines, get into the substance of the arrest and imprisonment and ongoing torture of Bradley Manning, and the fact that Barack Obama, the president of the United States, says the same thing that George W. Bush says, but without the sneer. Says the same thing that Dick Cheney said, but Obama has a heart in his chest that actually beats. But there's Barack Obama, when questioned about the torture of Bradley Manning, says that, well, you know, it's, I'm paraphrasing, but his statement was pretty much military justice is different from civilian justice. And Obama thinks that the military is handling the Bradley Manning affair just about right. So how does that make you feel, liberal? How does that make you feel, Obama supporter? I mean, if you're going to be consistent now, then you have to agree with Ralph Nader, don't you? It doesn't make any difference what Bradley Manning is accused of. And what is he accused of? Well, now they've upped the ante to where, and this is pointed out over and over again, especially this weekend, and you know this, that he is now facing a capital charge, a charge for which he could be hanged or shot by the U.S. military. Now, even though the prosecutors in this case, military prosecutors, said they're not going to seek the death penalty, it's not up to them. It is up to the presiding military judge, so to speak, who called the trial, who presides over the trial. This is the difference. This is one of the differences in the universal code or the uniform code of military justice versus civilian law. So Bradley Manning is facing execution for aiding the enemy. Who? What enemy did he aid? And with what? Now, hopefully, that'll come out in trial that those charges are nonsense. But he's being tried by the very organization that whose honor was rubbed into the mud with the video taken from the helicopter gunship of 13, 14, 15, whatever it was, people in Iraq being summarily executed by a bunch of people who were having a Saturday afternoon of sport. The organization for whom the murderers worked is the organization that's going to try Bradley Manning. And this president says, oh, well, I think the way things are being handled is just about right. Are you goddamn kidding me? Now, do you still back Barack Obama? Of course, if you're a Tea Party halfwit with your head 20 feet up your own ass, you understand the reason Obama shouldn't be there. He was born in Kenya. That's why he should be impeached, right? You morons. But for anyone who is still rational or still has the perception that they're rational, in this country any longer, where it concerns our war policies, our murder policies, our the death throes that this empire has entered into. Those people understand now why Obama should be impeached. Come on, Boehner. It's up to Boehner. Boehner can get this going. Boehner can order the, I wouldn't be surprised if he does, the House Judiciary Committee. Come on, John. Or are you part of the plot, too? Come on, Boehner. Do it. Pelosi wouldn't do it. To your criminal, do it to the Democrats' criminal. Go ahead. Come on, Boehner. Start the hearings. No? Not going to do it? Michael Moore has laid out some pretty heavy, I understand, over the weekend, criticisms in the form of tweets. So here we are. Let's have a contest. Let's see how many military actions the United States can be involved in at one time. We're up to three now. Let's see who will be next. And by the way, Mr. Obama, if you are going to be consistent, then why are we not bombing Saudi Arabia? I already mentioned that, didn't I? Why are we not bombing Syria? Oh, that's right. We use Syria to send people to be tortured. That's right. I forgot. We'll be back after the break. Sponsored by James Herlihy. Is a message supporting the Malloys for the past 8 years, the best 2-bit podcast ever. Keep it lit. Thanks, James. In Minnesota, oh my God, in Minnesota Republicans are pushing. Now, wait a minute. Do I want to tell you this yet? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. This ties in sort of to Bob Alexander's moment with Bob that's coming up here at the bottom of the hour. So let me give you this little segment first. This is from fightbacknews.org. Minnesota Republicans are pushing legislation in that state that would make it a crime for people on public assistance to have more than $20 in cash in their pocket at any given time. Now, this represents a change from their initial proposal, the Republicans, which suggested a legal ban on people on public assistance from having any cash on them at all. This is the kind of wholesale, stupefying insanity that's going on in this country. These treacherous sons of bitches, these are Republicans in Minnesota. On March 15th, Angel Buchner of the Welfare Rights Committee testified in front of the House Health and Human Services Reform Committee. She told committee members, quote, "We would like to address the provision that makes it illegal for families on MFIP, which is one of Minnesota's welfare programs, to withdraw cash from the cash portion of the MFIP grant. And in fact, appears to make it illegal for MFIP families to have any type of money at all in their pockets. How do you expect people to take care of business like paying bills such as gas, lights, water, trash, phone?" she asked. Angel Buchner is with the Welfare Rights Committee. House File 171, which I guess is the way the bills are filed under, using the word file, would make it so that families on MFIP and disabled single adults on general assistance and Minnesota supplemental aid, that these folks could not have their cash grants in cash or put into a checking account. Rather, they could only use a state-issued debit card at special terminals in certain businesses that are set up to accept the card. The bill also calls for unconstitutional residency requirements, not allowing the debit card to be used across state lines, and other provisions that the Welfare Rights Committee and others consider unacceptable. Ms. Buchner testified, quote, "We'll leave you with this. Is it not right to punish a whole group because of the supposed actions of a few? You in this room could have a pretty tough time if that was the case. It is not right to stigmatize and dehumanize women living the hard life of trying to raise children while living 60% below the poverty level. It is not right to use racist bumper sticker hate to inflict human misery for political gain," end quote. Surely Ms. Buchner realized who she was talking to. She was talking to Republicans, and it doesn't make any difference if they live in Minnesota or the first level of hell. They are still as evil and putrid and filthy, no matter where they live. To make it, to attempt to make, and how are you going to enforce it, you dumb bastards? How are you going to decide out on the street who has more than $20 in their pocket and is a recipient of Minnesota state aid? How are you going to do it, you demons? You filthy Christian devils, you? How are you going to do it? Are you going to stop people on the street? I need to do something, Kathy. I need to move to Minnesota and get on welfare and have $26 in my left pocket, in my right pocket, a Glock 9, and then stand there on the corner and hold a sign that says, "Hi, I'm on welfare, and I have $26 in my left pocket." We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Biology. Don't know much about radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by James Herlihy. His message, supporting the Malloys for the past 8 years, the best two-bit podcast ever. Keep it lit. Our military affairs, thanks, James, our military affairs correspondent sent me this this evening, I think. This is a public affairs news release from the Department of Defense Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense. Immediate release, March 20th. Department of Defense identifies Army casualties. The Department of Defense announced today the deaths of two soldiers who were supporting Operation Enduring Freedom. They died March 19 in Kandahar Province, Afghanistan, of wounds suffered when they were allegedly shot with small arms fire by an individual from a military security group. The incident is under investigation. They were assigned to the 4th Squadron, 2nd Striker Cavalry Regiment, Vilseck, Germany. Killed were Corporal Donald Mickler, Jr., 29, of Bucyrus, Ohio. PFSA Rudy Acosta, 19, of Canyon County, California. Now, the reason Sharon sent this in, wounds suffered, they were killed when they had wounds suffered when they were allegedly shot with small arms fire by an individual from a military security group. Like Blackwater? Like Z? Like, what's your immediate reaction? My immediate reaction is, the private contractor security forces killed, or one of the members of one of these security forces killed, two American soldiers, a 29-year-old and a 19-year-old. The investigation, or the incident, is under investigation, it says. Do we have Bob Alexander music someplace? I hope we have time to do this. I normally start a little quicker. Ah, there it is. It's time once again for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by our friends at Offshore Drilling. Hey, Mike. A 7-year-old station wagon rolls into the parking lot of a national burger chain on a Friday night. A family of four gets out of the car and goes into the brightly lit store. In the mom's arms is a little boy, about 2 years old, and a little girl, probably a first grader, is holding dad's hand. The dad takes the toddler from the mother's arm and goes over near the condiment table, where he takes one of the high chairs stacked up in the corner. He slides the child into the seat, buckles up the safety straps, and scoots the giggling boy in the chair over to a nearby table. He looks over at his wife and little girl standing in line waiting to order. Coming here on a Friday night every couple of weeks has become their routine. They both work, and after picking up the boy from daycare and their daughter from her after-school program, the idea of throwing together dinner at the last minute sometimes just seems like too much after a long, long work week. His daughter is looking at a display of toys. Each week, a different toy comes with the kids' meal, one of the characters from the latest kids' movie. The dad thinks ruefully to himself that this week she'll have the whole set, and they haven't even seen the movie yet. And they won't until the DVD comes out. The last time they went to a movie, the budget was completely blown. The babysitter was $20, tickets for two adults and a child came to over $30. Medium popcorn and a couple of small Cokes was almost $15. It's hard to justify laying out $65 just to see a movie when you're counting pennies. And they have to count every single penny. He and his wife have talked about it until they can't talk about it anymore. The constant dread eats at them. Even though they're both working, they're both doing everything they can, they know they're just treading water. and anything could sink them. So they try to push past the dread, take each day as it comes because they can't bear to look further down the road. The woman and the little girl step up to the cashier to order. The menu is spread out over the entire back wall with multiple combinations of different sandwiches and beverage sizes and fries or onion rings. But the mom is only looking at the far right side of the wall. That's where the dollar menu is. For as long as they've been coming here, that's all they've ever ordered from, except for the kids' meal, of course. They'd never ordered a double or triple anything. No extra bacon or cheese, no fish fillets or grilled chicken, no salads or special buns, just whatever's on the dollar menu. And truth be told, they really can't afford that. She knows she's only going to spend $15 or so tonight, but they come here a couple of times a month, sometimes three, and that $45 would be better spent on buying staples for cooking at home. The cashier rings up the order and hands over the numbered receipt. The little girl and her mom pick up napkins, ketchup, and a few plastic knives and take them over to their table. Soon the cashier calls out, "Number 47, your order's ready." The dad goes up to the counter, brings the tray to the table, and starts to distribute the burgers and fries after handing the kids' meal box over to his daughter. His wife begins cutting up a cheeseburger into quarters for her little boy as the toddler digs into the fries. She gives him the burger wedges. And as she picks up her own sandwich, she and her husband look at each other and have one of those moments where nothing is said, but everything is understood. Of course the food is crap and the toy is crap and we shouldn't even be doing this, but the kids enjoy coming here, and if we didn't come here, we wouldn't go out at all. The flash of marital ESP passes at the same moment the little boy grabs for his dad's Coke. As the family of four eats their dinner, one of the wealthiest men in the country steps out of his chauffeured limousine and walks into the city's finest restaurant. The maitre d' instantly recognizes him and ushers him to their best table. The rich man says he wishes the chef to surprise him, and the sommelier has free rein to pick out the choicest wines that will best complement each course. 2 hours later, the rich man has finished a magnificent meal and is savoring a 180-year-old cognac. He removes the Cohiba from his cigar case, trims the end, but declines the light offered by the maitre d', who has magically appeared at the table. "You have to light a Cohiba just so." The maitre d' inquires if he desires anything, and as the rich man shakes his head, "No," the bill is discreetly placed upon the fine linen tablecloth. The rich man glances at the bill. He has no way of knowing that his dinner costs 50 times that of the family of four's meal, and he tells the maitre d' he'll be putting tonight's bill on the tab, as usual. The maitre d' happily agrees. The rich man takes out his golden ebony Mont Blanc fountain pen, and after adding a generous tip for the restaurant staff, signs the name of the family of four. They'll be picking up his tab tonight. Huge numbers of American corporations pay no state or federal income taxes at all. Much-needed programs have been drastically cut back or done away with, as many Americans have given up their pensions and health benefits just to keep their jobs and stagnated wages. This is how it works in today's America. Those not in the top 10% are on the hook for the wars and the bailouts and the bonuses and everything else. Instead of using the tired cliche of zero-sum game, let's just call it what it is. Class warfare. They won. We lost. From Fight Back News, quote, "Minnesota Republicans are pushing legislation that would make it a crime for people on public assistance to have more than $20 cash in their pockets during any given month. This represents a change from their initial proposal, which banned them from having any money at all," end quote. For the elite, the fine lines separating insanity, greed, and evil have been erased. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob. At superbeans.com/rant. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. I know most people who listen to this program will understand that moment with Bob. But I wonder how many people on the right who will hear that and be puzzled, like, what the hell was the point of that? What? The rich man had a meal? Well, he's entitled to it. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps. If he wants 180-year-old cognac, okay. And the family of four and the burger joint? Well, if that's all they can eat, that's because they didn't pull themselves up by their bootstraps. I mean, what the hell is the problem with any of that? Protest, and we're going to post it at MikeMalloy.com during the break here at the top of the hour. I guess Kathy already did. And I want you to take a look at it. You will see the Virginia State Police riot squad moving in on everybody, and the part that's particularly infuriating to me is the arrest of Daniel Ellsberg again, and Colonel Ann Wright, an Army, I believe she's a full bird colonel, who got out of the military. And I want you to see it. This is the truth that you won't see on television. But I want you to take a look at it. And I want you to see the way patriots are treated as opposed to war criminals like Bush, Cheney, and Barack Obama. War criminals are treated with great deference by corporate capitalist America. War criminals are loved and appreciated and pampered and taken care of by corporate America. Patriots like Daniel Ellsberg or Colonel Ann Wright or 25-year-old Iraq War veterans who stand crying on a stage in Quantico, Virginia, trying to explain why he has become an anti-war activist and somebody advocating for the release of one of his fellow soldiers, Bradley Manning, and in that moment of anguish rips off of his uniform his battle ribbons and all the hundreds of people who showed up, and only hundreds, on U.S. Highway 1, in front of one of the gates at the Quantico Marine Base in Virginia, protesting what? The war? Which war? Protesting what? The invasion? Which invasion? The occupation? Which occupation? Or were they protesting the fact that a 23-year-old kid, I'm sorry, he's a kid, who is now being psychologically tortured and charged with a crime that could get him executed? What did he do? He told the goddamn truth. That's what he did. If he did that, he's not been convicted. He's not been tried. And what was the truth? That the United States military instructs and trains the people in its ranks to gun down from a helicopter gunship 14 people on a Saturday afternoon on a side street in Baghdad? That was his crime? While Dick Cheney and Barack Obama and Donald Rumsfeld and George W. Bush and the rest of these butcherers and killers and murderers go on their big book tours and their trips to Brazil and their land buying expeditions in Paraguay and whatever the hell else they do. But I want you to look at the video when you get a chance. The white-haired woman being arrested next to Daniel Ellsberg is a very recent Army colonel. An Army colonel. And I want you to see the complete disrespect and contempt that the Virginia State Police in their full battle garb show this woman. Ann Ellsberg. And the other people being arrested. And take a look at the video. Just look at it. Just look at the faces of the people being arrested. Look at it. God damn it. Just look at their faces. Watch them as they're being arrested. And when you can, because you have to look through their shielded faces, when you can, take a look at the cops busting them. If that's what they really are. See if you can see any bit of humanity on their faces. This is the police state. You live there. Do you not realize that yet? Do you not realize that you live in a police state? Oh, no, they're not knocking on your door. They're not hauling your auntie and your uncle away in a cattle car. But you live in a police state, and so do I. That's where we live, where the President of the United States can order an airstrike into any country he goddamn chooses. A, B, the President of the United States can say that the torture of a 23-year-old Army private first class is perfectly okay. Are you not aware of where we live now? 6 and a half past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Randy White. He has a message for his old friend, David Flash Long. Rest easy, Flash. We're keeping your eternal cry lit. To the rise of the proletariat and downfall of the bourgeoisie. Thank you, Randy. Marcus from Germany, from Munich, emails in regarding talking about what we were talking about last hour about the really murderous bastards have it easy, and people like Daniel Ellsberg or Colonel Ann Wright or Randy or Bradley Manning are treated with such contempt. Marcus writes, an appropriate quote would be from Aesop. We hang the petty thieves and appoint the great ones to public office. Marcus in Munich, Germany. This is kind of interesting. This is from the Writers Anonymous. It's from Scroogle Scraper. Don't ask. Let's be honest, you'll never win the lottery. On the other hand, the chances are pretty good that you'll slave away at some miserable job the rest of your life. And that's because you were in all likelihood born into the wrong social class. Let's face it, you're a member of the working caste. Sorry. As a result, you don't have the education, upbringing, connections, manners, appearance, and good taste to ever become one of us. In fact, you'd probably need a book the size of the Yellow Pages to list all the unfair advantages that we have over you. That's why we're so relieved to know that you still continue to believe all those silly fairy tales about justice and equal opportunity in America. Of course, in a hierarchical system, social system like ours, there's never been much room at the top to begin with. Besides, it's already occupied by us, and we like it up here so much that we intend to keep it that way. But at least there's usually someone lower in the social hierarchy you can feel superior to and kick in the teeth once in a while. Even a lowly dishwasher can easily find some poor slob further down in the pecking order to sneer and spit at. So be thankful for migrant workers and prostitutes and homeless street people. Always remember that if everyone like you were economically secure and socially privileged like us, there would be no one left to fill all those boring, dangerous, low-paid jobs in our economy, and no one to fight our wars for us or blindly follow orders in our totalitarian corporate institutions, and certainly no one to go meekly to their grave without having lived a full and creative life. So please keep up the good work. You also probably don't have the same greedy, compulsive drive to possess wealth, power, and prestige that we have. And even though you may sincerely want to change the way you live, you're also afraid of the very change you desire, thus keeping you and others like you in a nervous state of limbo. So you go through life mechanically playing your assigned social role, terrified what others think would think should you ever dare to break out of the mold. Naturally, we try to play you off against each other whenever it suits our purposes. High-wage workers against low-wage, unionized against non-unionized, black against white, male against female, American worker against Japanese, against Mexican, against... We could continually push your wages down by invoking foreign competition, and we do. The law of supply and demand, or national security, or the bloated federal budget. We throw you on the unemployed scrap heap if you step out of line or jeopardize our profits. And to give you an occasional break from the monotony of our daily economic blackmail, we allow you to participate in our stage-managed electoral shell games, better known to you ordinary folks as elections. Happily, you haven't a clue as to what's really happening. Instead, you blame aliens, tree-hugging environmentalists, blacks, Jews, welfare queens, and countless others for your troubled situation. We're also very pleased that many of you still embrace the work ethic Even though most jobs in our economy degrade the environment, undermine your physical and emotional health, and basically suck your one and only life right out of you. We obviously don't know much about work, but we're sure glad you do. Of course, life could be different. Society could be intelligently organized to meet the real needs of the general population. You and others like you could collectively fight to free yourselves from our domination, but you don't know that. In fact, you can't even imagine that another way of life is possible. And that's probably the greatest, most significant achievement of our system. Robbing you of your imagination, your creativity, and your ability to think and act for yourself. So, we'd truly like to thank you from the bottom of our heartless hearts. Your loyal sacrifice makes possible our corrupt luxury. Your work makes our system work. So, thanks so much for knowing your place without even knowing it. By Anonymous. You really don't think that's true, do you? Oh my God, did you know that Owsley Stanley died on the 14th? What is that, 8 days ago? 7 days ago? According to the New York Times, Owsley Stanley died, he was 76, in a car accident in Australia. He was 76 and lived in the bush near Cairns in the Australian state of Queensland. His car swerved off a highway and down an embankment before hitting trees near Mareeba, a town in Queensland. The Associated Press reported his wife, Sheila, was injured in the accident. He previously was a ballet dancer and a member of the United States Air Force. He was born in 1935 in Kentucky to a patrician family. His paternal grandfather, for whom he was named, was a congressman, governor of Kentucky, and United States senator. Young Owsley, his real name was Augustus Owsley Stanley III, but he went by Owsley Stanley. Young Owsley, whose adolescent hairiness caused him to be known ever after as Bear, was sent to a military prep school in Maryland. Briefly attend the University of Virginia before enlisting in the Air Force. In 1963, Mr. Stanley enrolled at University of California, Berkeley. The next year, he encountered LSD, a transformative experience. He says, I remember the first time I took acid and walked outside, the cars were kissing the parking meters. Yeah. If you're of a certain generation or a certain mindset or a certain law-breaking attitude from all those years ago, you remember Owsley Acid, don't you? Owsley, Augustus Owsley Stanley III, died in a car accident in Queensland, Australia. You gotta wonder, don't you? Huh? Aren't you wondering right now? Car accident? There's no traffic out there. Car accident. We'll be right back.
truth seekers. Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Randy White for his old friend David Flash Long. Rest easy, Flash. We're keeping your eternal cry lit, that cry to the rise of the proletariat and downfall of the bourgeoisie. Thanks, Randy. This is kind of interesting. David Dayan writing at Fire Dog Lake. The governor there has helped state senator's girlfriend get a staff gig. Did you hear about this? I'll just quote it to you. The controversy surrounding Wisconsin State Senator Randy Hopper. I love his name. Randy Hopper and his girlfriend in Madison has now reached Scott Walker. It turns out that Walker helped a woman get a state job at a time when he was railing against the cost of public employees and claiming that the state was broke. Valerie Cass, a former Republican legislative staffer, was hired February 7th as a communications specialist with the State Department of Regulation and Licensing. She is being paid $20.35 per hour. Cass previously had worked in the state Senate and for the Republican campaign consulting firm Persuasion Partners in Madison, Wisconsin. Who exactly recommended her for the post with the state? Cullen Werwe, spokesman for the governor, confirmed that it was Keith Gilkes, Walker's chief of staff. She was then interviewed by the Department of Regulations and Licensing's executive assistant and hired by the Walker administration. February 7th was just days before Walker announced his budget repair bill to strip collective bargaining rights and increase pension and health care contributions. You can read between the lines here if you want to. Randy Hopper, the state senator, represents a... no pun intended, a swing district. He won election by 163 votes in 2008. He was going to have a lot of trouble voting for a bill stripping workers of their rights. He needed some incentive from the governor. Days before the announcement, Walker's administration gets his girlfriend a job. Walker's spokesman admits that Valerie Cass was a late addition to the Walker administration, which raises the intrigue. Prior to that job, she was helping, that guy Rents Priebus get the position of head of the Republican National Committee. She's also being paid substantially more than the previous holder of the position, about $12,000 a year extra by the supposedly thrifty Walker administration. And the reports are out there, of course, that Hopper's wife plans to donate to his Democratic opponent in the effort to recall him. So, you know, these stories are not news flashes. They are just they're real yawners. So Senator Randy Hopper is hired by the Republican governor. She's given a state job that pays $800 a week at the very same time that Scott Walker is telling everybody that the state is broke and the people already on the state payroll have to be laid off, fired, and their collective bargaining rights taken away so that he, Walker, has more of a free hand to determine the financial solvency of the state of Wisconsin, all of which is a bunch of filthy goddamn garbage and vomit, and you know it is, and I know it is, and the 1 million people in Wisconsin who voted for this pig, do you not know it now? Do you not get it, all you good Christians over there in Wisconsin? Come on. All you good Methodists and Presbyterians, come on, wake the hell up and smell the brimstone. You don't get it? No. Some of you don't. So your family values Christian evangelical governor, once again, another example of this filth and hypocrisy that dominates evangelical Christianity and corporatism and capitalism and, in fact, pretty much all of the Republican Party and about 90% of the Democratic Party. Right? There it is. But we're talking Republicans right now, right? I mean, we got the Democrats with the fact that Obama is now a war criminal. But the Republicans in Wisconsin, what do you folks think? I mean, do you have any thought at all about your governor getting his good buddy's girlfriend a job? His married good buddy? Jesus, God, wake up. We'll be right back.
Five damn days, five long days, and at the end of the fifth, you walking in like, hey, chilling on his vacation, sitting patiently. Them black folks gotta hope, gotta wait and see if FEMA really comes through in an emergency. But nobody seems to have a sense of urgency. Now the mayor's been reduced to crying, and guess what said niggas been used to dying.
He said, in groundbreaking.
More flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Ouch. 25 before the hour. The hour is sponsored by Randy White. He has a message for his old friend David Flash Long. Rest easy, Flash. We're keeping your eternal cry lit to the rise of the proletariat and downfall of the bourgeoisie. A prominent Republican fundraiser was charged last week in a federal grand jury indictment with orchestrating a Ponzi scheme that defrauded investors of hundreds of millions of dollars. The guy's name is Timothy Durham. He was arrested early in the morning at his West Hollywood home, charged with 12 counts of securities and wire fraud in federal court. Prosecutors accuse him, Timothy Durham, of taking money investors trusted to his business, the Fair Finance Company, and using it to make loans to himself and his businesses. Over a seven-year period, more than 5,000 investors were defrauded out of more than $200 million. The company filed for bankruptcy. The bankruptcy trustee told creditors in August that much of the $54 million Mr. Durham had lent himself helped finance his lavish lifestyle. At his Indianapolis home, a 45-car garage housed an Aston Martin designed to look like the car James Bond drove in Goldfinger. Miami, he had a four-bedroom yacht. Mr. Durham donated more than $800,000 to the Republican Party and candidates in Indiana, including $200,000 to Governor Mitch Daniels. Neither Mr. Durham's lawyer nor Mr. Daniels' campaign responded to requests for comment. Remember what Bob Alexander wrote about tonight? The wealthy, like this guy, he just chickles and chuckles and giggles and gaggles and drinks his 120-year-old cognac while defrauding people out of millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions and quintillions and septillions and sextillions and octillions and University of Michigan, students there, nearly 100 students, rallied last Wednesday to protest a plan to have Governor Rick Snyder as a commencement speaker at spring graduation ceremonies next month. You know, Rick Snyder, who has signed into law a bill that utterly, absolutely, and with no question ends representative government in Michigan. ends it. It is over. It is done. It is now the law. One student said, I woke up on Monday to learn that of all people, Rick Snyder would be speaking at my graduation. At first I was shocked and I was angry. Blah, blah, blah. You know, Snyder is known to the students for cutting funding for public education and tax contributions to state colleges and universities and blah, blah, blah. One student said, we know that Rick Snyder's agenda is not about the budget. It isn't about Michigan's troubled economy, and it sure as hell is not about putting hardworking Michiganders back to work. It's about Rick Snyder making his cronies even richer on the backs of the hardest working and poorest among us, end quote. Another student, a senior history major from Ann Arbor, started an online petition drive and plans to present petition to the University of Michigan Regents, saying we don't want this pig bastard. At least a couple of students at Wednesday's rally disagreed with the protests against Rick Snyder's appearance, saying, get this,
well, the university should be a place that welcomes varying viewpoints.
Varying viewpoints? Destroying democracy in your state, you young punk, is a varying viewpoint? Ending representative government is a varying viewpoint? Here's a good little Nazi, the student. Nick Clay, a 21-year-old chemical engineering student from Dearborn, said, I just think we need to be open to other opinions and tolerate diverse opinions at a place like the University of Michigan. End quote. University of Michigan spokeswoman Kelly Cunningham said that the school is pleased that Governor Snyder, a three-time University of Michigan alumnus, will speak. What does a three-time mean? The spokeswoman said, quote, the university has a long and proud tradition of inviting the newly elected governor to speak at commencement. We are honored that since 1967, every newly elected governor has presented the commencement address. I wonder if the spokeswoman for University of Munich, University of Berlin, wherever, said the same thing. We are very glad to have Chancellor Hitler speak at our commencement. We've had the chancellor, the newly elected chancellor, appointed, elected, whatever, appear at going all the way back to the 14th century. You know what? Of course he'll speak there. Of course he will. 100 students organizing a protest? Nah, forget about it. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, now gives himself, or the legislature gave him the power to appoint viceroys, provosts. What would you call them? People who, when a municipality or a county or a school board or a water utility, whatever, is in financial trouble. However, the ruling board of that organization was put together is now immaterial. Governor Rick will appoint someone from corporate America to go in there and clean house, fire everybody, and take control. If the city council, for example, in City X is on the verge of bankruptcy, Governor Snyder appoints a special overseer from corporate America who goes in and says, you're all fired. I'm taking over now. And it is state law, isn't it? Yeah, state law. Now, not to be outdone, the governor of Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Corbett, space cadet, he wants to hand authority over some of the state's most critical environmental decisions to Alan Walker, a Pennsylvania energy exec with his own track record of running up against the state's environmental regulations. Walker, who has contributed $184,000 to Governor Corbett's campaign efforts since 2004, is CEO and owner of Bradford Energy Company and Bradford Coal. He also owns or has an interest in 12 other companies, including a trucking business, a Central Pennsylvania oil and gas company. Walker was Governor Tom Corbett's Space Cadet's first appointee. Corbett chose him to lead the Department of Community and Economic Development in December before taking office. And now, as Tom Corbett, Governor and Space Cadet, stakes much of the state's economy on the Marcellus Shale gas drilling, you know, the fracking that's going on. Read Gasland or watch Gasland. It's on HBO. Watch it. Anyway, where was I? Walker was chosen by Corbett to lead the Department of Economic Community. Now, as Corbett stakes much of the state's economy on the Marcellus Shale gas drilling, a paragraph tucked into the 1,184-page budget gives the billionaire Walker unprecedented authority to, quote, expedite any permit or action pending in any agency where the creation of jobs may be impacted. That includes coal, oil, gas, trucking. Well, what about that? Walker is executive of the Pennsylvania Coal Association. He served as chairman of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry. He also has first-hand experience with the state's environmental regulations because his companies would likely have applied for permits similar to those the oil and gas industry are now pursuing in the Marcellus Shale. Like many energy companies, his too have run into problems with the state. In 2002, three of Walker's coal companies notified Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection that they had run out of money and they were going to stop treating the 173 million gallons of polluted water they produced each year and released into tributaries of the Susquehanna River. Oh, I'm sorry, we're out of money. Never mind. The governor, Tom Corbett, Space Cadet, says drilling in the Marcellus Shale will bring Pennsylvania 200,000 jobs and $18 billion in economic benefit by the end of the decade. Da, 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 da. A 2009 ProPublica investigation revealed the Pennsylvania sewage treatment plants were accepting millions of gallons of drilling wastewater, but lacked the technology to remove or treat the chemicals and pollutants the water contained. Oh, Jesus. Why go on? So, Governor Tom Corbett, Space Cadet, has appointed a criminal, C. Alan Walker, to be the authority where it concerns... Oh, you know. We'll be right back. Has been sponsored by Randy White. Message for his old friend David Flash Long. Rest easy, Flash. We're keeping your eternal cry lit to the rise of the proletariat and downfall of the bourgeoisie. Thanks to Randy and James earlier, and before that, Alice at Heel and Hollers for the sponsorships this hour, or this evening, or whatever. Joe, a different Joe, writes in, Mike, in 2002, House Joint Resolution 114 authorized the use of force against Iraq and Iran at the president's discretion. Remember that? Vaguely. That was in 2002. In 2007, then Senator Barack Obama introduced a bill to strip the resolution provision authorizing the use of force against Iran. The rationale was to prevent Bush from indiscriminately bombing Iran's nuclear plants. Later that year, Senator Obama said in an interview, quote, "The president does not have the power under the Constitution to unilaterally authorize a military attack in a situation that does not involve stopping an actual or imminent threat to this nation," end quote. And now, President Obama launches a unilateral attack without congressional approval as required by the War Powers Resolution of 1973 against a nation that poses no threat to us. In my opinion, this is an impeachable offense. At least Bush had approval from Congress to invade Iraq. Well, sort of. But Joe's right. But again, if you need any further proof of the helplessness of Barack Obama, the system is now set up to deny whoever is sitting in the Oval Office, and really, there's no point debating this, deny that person the right to use his or her moral sense or his or her constitutional powers or his or her ethical persuasions to be the president of the United States. Forget the rule of law. Forget all of it. Ethics, morality, rule of law, constitution, no. It's gone. It does not exist. Stop fooling yourself. Stop it. Stop it. Or you'll have to go stand in the corner, and when you, after 30 minutes, you'll have to sit down and write 50 times, "I will stop fooling myself. Folks, listen, hello? The country we live in now is not the country you were born in, if you are over the age of 15. Truly, it is not the country you were born in. That country is gone. Barack Obama is no more going to save this country than he is going to pee up a rope. It's not going to happen. If the country is saved, it'll be saved by corporate America and saved only to a degree that benefits the ruling class. I mean, that's all. Oh, by the way, I had an interesting conversation at one point with Tara from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com this weekend in Washington. I don't know what the hell we were talking about, but we were talking about fascists and how the Italian fascists look kind of goofy and the Spanish fascists with those little pillbox hats were ridiculous. But the Nazis, good God, whoever designed their uniforms, whoa! And Tara said, "You don't know who designed their uniform?" I said, "No." She said it was Hugo Boss. Hugo Boss? Yeah. The Hugo Boss that still sells clothing? The same? Yeah. I said, no. Tara, you got it wrong. No. I got it right, she said. Well, later on that night, after we split up, I went back to the hotel and got on the Wikipedia. Tara can't be right. There's no way. Hugo Boss, come on. What? Next you're going to tell me that Calvin Klein invented, the Nazi, the Italian. I looked it up. Sure enough, Hugo Boss. Siemens, the big elevator, among other things, company, another Nazi business that used slave labor. Everybody, not just Jews, everybody, Italians, anybody, Poles, anybody they could sweep up, Catholics, didn't make any difference. Hugo Boss. So that conversation we had on Friday, I guess it was yesterday, Sunday, sitting in the lobby of the hotel looking at the free New York Times they have out there. And inside, I see this huge ad for Hugo Boss. Hugo Boss clothing. Son of a bitch. I don't know. I just thought I would throw that in. You can throw it right back out. We're out of time. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.